in association with Newsarama. Welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. No, I haven't suspended my podcast. It's just been a busy September, so that's why, unfortunately, after the Bendis tapes, we've been down to weekly episodes. But appreciate you sticking along for the ride. Everybody's been, it seems like, enjoying all the stuff we've had for you so far this September. Here's another Dan Dandy. On this edition of the Word Balloon podcast, we speak with writer Joshua Fialkoff. We talk about his top cow books like Psyblade and his pilot season entry, Alibi, his new Western contribution in Image Comics anthology, Outlawed Territory, and his new Dark Horse miniseries, The Cleaners. Josh has also been busy writing vampire stories, from wrapping up his run on Vampirella to adapting the first two Dark Hunter vampire novels by best-selling author Sherilyn Kenyon, Night Pleasures and Night Embrace, in manga style for Dable Brothers. And we'll also be talking about Fialkoff's new video work online as a writer in the next chapter for the Lonely Girl 15 online suspense drama, The Resistance. But first things first, the conversation begins as we speak with Josh about his Top Cow books. Well, first of all, regarding pilot season, congratulations on last year's win with Psyblade, which I guess is then resulting in is it an ongoing or is it a miniseries for Psyblade?
I think it's a hopeful ongoing series. We're just going to call it a series.
Okay.
Top Cow was very upfront with me and I think with the fans. Like, if there's definitely an audience for the book, and if the audience is there, we're hoping we can do it for a long, long time to come. I'm really, really proud of the series. I finished writing the first arc a little while back and a couple months ago now. And I think it's really cool. Rick is doing some great, great work. It's not going to be, I think the pilot, it's funny because the pilot was super, super action-y. It was just really crazy, intense action. And the series is kind of a departure from that. Like, I kind of got all that out of my system. And what you get in the series is something that's much more character-based. It's something that's really exploring not just her character, but what it means to be one of these special people in the Top Cow universe. And I think right now, just in general, across all books, Top Cow is doing such amazing stuff with their universe by creating, really starting to build kind of a cohesive world and with between Witchblade and the Darkness, which I think a lot of people still have the stigma attached to them in their minds. But if you read those books today, they are amazing. Hester and Ron Mars are doing them, and they're both doing such a great job. And so for me, that's the challenge for me, is to try and write to the level that these two amazingly talented guys are.
No, I agree. I think Top Cow, you're right, in general, has upped the ante in writing. And it does show, and you're right. I think, and that's why maybe these pilot season books are a good idea, because these other concepts, like your new pilot season book, Alibis, I mean, that's just a good straight up, kind of crime, not crime, but how would you? I mean, I guess it's spy suspense thriller. How would you?
Yeah, it's funny, and I think there's this weird thing in comics, which is that. Things that are clearly defined genres in any other medium, you put them in comics and people are all confused. Like, what? And there's spies running around. I don't understand what that is. It's really like I wanted to do something that was a straight spy thriller that was sort of, it was the Bourne Identity, but it was something that very much had to live in comics and that could really use the medium.
Mm-hmm.
And you get, with Alibi and the combination of a great concept that was, something developed in-house from Top Cow that they just let me kind of run wild with, and then having Jeremy Pahn on art, I think the book turned out just so amazingly cool. It's the kind of book that, when I read comics, it's exactly the kind of book I wish there were more of that I could read.
Oh, yeah.
It's sort of, for people who like Queen and Country, it's very much in that kind of Queen and Country mold, but
absolutely.
I think it's lighter than Queen and Country, despite the various deaths and heads exploding. It's actually, I think, a little more, it has a little bit more of that kind of, out there actually having fun with what you're doing. Like, these are people who enjoy doing the kind of high-level espionage instead of being, sat miserable about it and having to kind of wear it as a yoke.
Well, and it has a good real-world feel, and Jeremy's art only magnifies that real-world feel because, in fact, the cover with the girl... I'm like, I know that woman, and I don't know why I know that woman. And I know it's a friend of Jeremy's. That's what he told me when I saw him at Wizard Chicago.
Right.
But I was convinced that I knew that woman, and that just like kind of shows you what kind of level of realism you're looking at that kind of art.
But at the same time, you don't what you get from him that you don't get from most guys who have that realism in their work is it doesn't feel stiff.
Not
like
at all.
They feel like these fluid drawings. They don't feel super photo ref. Like he really just has a knack, and he just cranks the stuff out. I mean, I've just sitting next to him at San Diego watching him sketch. Like I've never seen anybody who can just do it and just crank them out and have them look both so realistic but so almost expressionistic at the same time, where
sure.
there's this gritty kind of edge to them. He's just the guy's amazing, and he's going to be a huge talent. So I'm hoping to get to ride his coattails until that happens.
No, I think it's great, man, and I've always enjoyed his work with B. Clay Moore. And
the most exciting thing about doing the book for me, when right around the time I got into writing comics, the book that really pushed me over the edge was an image book Jeremy did called Paradigm.
Yep.
And it's funny because as I tell this story to people, everyone's like, oh, man, that book was amazing. And Paradigm was this book that was so completely, it was surrealism. It was like all over the place, crazy. But Jeremy's art took this fantastical story and grounded it in so much of the real world that when you see these, you know, mystical creatures wandering around and you have, you know, people, you know, walking through time and space, it feels grounded and it feels real. And I think, like, you know, as a writer, to have somebody who can just do that with your work is so satisfying. It's so nice to just, it's going to feel real and it's going to feel practical and it's going to work. Like, there's an alibi, like, there's a lot of the action stuff that I'm writing it and I'm like, I don't know how somebody can, I don't know if they can do this. Like, it's, like, there's one scene in particular where he's jumping back and forth between the buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this giant two-page spread of just a guy diving. You know, so it's a static, you know, it's one panel, but it conveys motion and it conveys power and it conveys timing, like all these things, and he just nails it. He's fucking amazing. Goddamn, is he great.
Yeah, he's awesome. Do you remember another straight-up spy book from the 60s that Gil Kane did? His name is Savage.
I do, yeah.
That's the vibe I got from Alibi. And
Like, we've talked about in the past, you and I, like, I love comics in the 60s and 70s. I think in the 60s and 70s was really the last time that American comics were taking chances and trying to do different things, whether it's, you know, through the Warren, you know, the Warren magazine.
Oh, yeah.
Or even Marvel. I mean, Stan Lee writing, you know, Twilight Zone-esque horror stories for
sure.
Marvel. Like, I mean, that's just, people don't know that stuff exists. And honestly, like for me, that's some of the best stuff Stan ever did.
I completely agree.
And you know, and it's you look at those books, you look at the work that Archie Goodwin was doing, and the guy is just—he's head and tails above everyone else. And he really, you know, he looked back to the 50s and saw this is the stuff that worked in the 50s, and he recreated it. And I think you had a lot of these kind of real visionary guys, and it was a time where it feels like you could do mainstream books that people would read that weren't superheroes, you know? And,
absolutely.
And in fact, it then went on to influence superhero books in the 80s, which is why you get, you know, the cool Frank Miller Daredevil. You know, that's why that's why you get Alan Moore Swamp Thing, where they had seen, like, oh, shit, I can do a horror book with the giant plant man, and it can be amazing. And that's, you know, you read that first Alan Moore Swamp Thing issue, and it's like a perfect piece of horror. It's literally just a perfect little nugget of horror.
Oh, yeah. Don't slight, but you can't slight Len Wein and Bernie Wrightson, because in those pre-Alan Moore issues, there were some good stories in there, man. I understand. I mean, Alan made the left turn, and everyone was happy. But you go back, and there's some great concepts in those, especially, like, first year and a half of Swamp Thing.
No, it's true. The book is one of those. It's like a funny challenge, because I think everybody wants to write Swamp Thing, but then the mammoth responsibility of having to follow just giants in this business, like I would give my right arm or other body part to get a shot at it, but at the same time, like, just knowing, like, you're coming after these, just the best of the best. I mean, Mike Ploog's art on the book, oh, my God, so good. Anyway,
back to your world. And, you know, it's great, Josh, because the first thing that I noticed of your work was back in the day, Elk's Run, which, you know, is still enjoying, I'm hoping, good success now with, is it Villard or Villard for the imprint?
I think Villard.
Let's call it for Villard.
Let's go that way.
But no, it's I think the trade is great after the trouble you went through getting the issues out that you could during its initial run.
It's this funny thing. Like, I am incredibly proud of that book, but at the same time, like, every time I think about it, it comes with all that baggage.
Really?
All the baggage of just getting it there. The birthing of that book, and don't get me wrong, like, it made me not just a better writer going through all that stuff, but, like, it influenced, you know, my business acumen, like, my how I treat what I do. And, you know, you learn to there needs to be kind of a wall between you and your work.
Okay.
Because that book, Elk's Run, is so near and dear to my heart. And so as I was, you know, as we were kind of going through our travails with it, you know, you have to learn really quickly that you can't take it personally, that you're doing something that you know is good. And just because nobody's reading it doesn't make that any less true, you know. And so it was a big learning experience. And it's, you know, the thing about Elk's Run is no matter what happens ever from here forward, I will always have that book. I will always have sitting on my shelf that 225 page, you know, trade paperback that I am just immensely proud of from cover to cover.
Well, and I hope as people, you know, recognize your work and are interested in digging back, that they will reach back for Elk's Run, because it's still a very original thriller, and that, like I said, that was the first thing that I took notice of. And then I went back and saw the horse and buggy stuff, the westerns that you did, and that's cool, and I'm glad to see that you're back in westerns, because you're part of the Image anthology called Outlaw Territory that's coming out in October, and I love your Rod Serling-esque title, Incident Over 36 Days in the Colorado Rockies.
Yeah, it's one of those things, like, it's got that... Yeah, you know, I wanted to do, you know, my nature to do, when I do westerns, I automatically do horror, whether I mean to or not. And the book is, you know, it's aside from being western, it's more or less genre free.
Okay.
But it couldn't be supernatural. He wanted it to be real world. And so I sat down and thought about what was probably the worst, most horrible, awful goddamn thing that could happen to you back in the 1880s, and proceeded to write something. I think it's actually one of my favorite things I've written in a long time. I think it's a really cool, really unpleasant story. And I got to what I love writing shorts. Like, writing shorts is probably, I would say, my favorite thing to do as a comic writer. And it's funny because obviously you can't, you know, make a living doing that.
Sure.
But writing short stories, especially in the comic form, there's a freedom to it. And again, not to harp on it, but going back to the EC stuff and going back to all the horror anthos, like, there's something so powerful, and, you know, maybe it's just ingrained in us because of that stuff, but telling a compelling, you know, 8 to 12 page story, which, again, you know, you go back into the history of comics and you look at it, and what were those, you know, you look at the early Sandman stories in the, you know, in the 30s and 40s, and what were they? They were 12-page murder mysteries that involved a guy in a mask, but they were 12 pages. They were tight. They were stories where you get character. There were stories where you get plot. There were stories where you get action, and you're done. And you get everything you want in those you know, 8 to 12 pages. And I think it's the comic medium just does such a great job at doing all those things, of things that I don't know you can do in even prose, even in short, you know, in prose fiction. Because you don't have the room. In prose, you have to build so much, whereas in comics, you have the language, you have the visual language to shortcut and to get you through where you need to be. I think very much, and I think it's very much true of even, you know, the reason why The Twilight Zone still works. You look at The Twilight Zone as a TV show. This is, like, the most ridiculous tangent I'm on right now.
No, I like it, though.
You look at The Twilight Zone as a TV show, and despite the fact that it's clearly made in its era, the horror and the moments of it are so, they managed to be both universal and incredibly specific, partly because it's in black and white, partly because, I guess mostly because of how strong the writing is. Like, you get sucked into this world just long enough. Like, it's just enough to hook you in so that when they punch you in the stomach, it means something. You know, and that's,
yep.
Like, that to me is one of the most wonderful things about being a writer is trying to reach that goal. And, you know, like I said, that's something, like, I fully hope to someday be able to just, you know, do more anthology work, because I feel like most of that stuff is my strongest work, and it means, like, just to see it and have it be, like I said, to have it be this contained little thing that doesn't need any reference, that you don't need to read 500 other crossover issues. Like, it's
sure.
This thing.
Is,
it's this thing, and it either means something to you or it doesn't, and that's it.
So was it easy when the opportunity came up, you know, to kind of reach back? Because, as you say, in your Horse and Buggy days and everything. And what were your anthologies called, Josh?
It was Western Tales of Terror.
Western Tales of Terror, absolutely.
That was the big one.
Hell yeah. And that's, you know, I mean, was it easy for you just to come up with one? I mean, it's, you know.
I jot down short story ideas all day. It's like I have more short story ideas than I have time to do them. You know, like, I love being able to tell these short, punchy stories. And Western, as far as Westerns goes, like, that's, I mean, if I could have my other dream career would be one of those guys writing pulp Western novels.
Zane Grey or...
Yeah, like, just to be able to just crank them out, because I think the Western, aside from being quintessentially American, Leone aside, they speak to so much of our cultural identity, in a way that, you know, in the way that I think fairy tales, yeah, as fairy tales grew out of European traditions,
mm-hmm.
for the most part, I feel that Westerns are the American legacy of that.
I understand what you're saying.
Because you have, you know, much like fairy tales, you really do have these stock characters who come up. It's always a morality tale. And pretty much at the end, everybody gets fucked. Which is, you know, that's, to me, that's the...
That's the American way.
Yeah, it's the American way. No, the thing is, you know, the bad guy loses, and the good guy only kind of wins.
Sure.
You know, like, the good guy, I guess, technically wins, but, you know, is that good enough?
Are you an old-time radio fan?
Yeah, I am, actually. I grew up, my folks aren't American, and so I was actually introduced more to BBC radio stuff. I grew up, like, on the Goon Show.
Oh, sure, sure.
Specifically, this is me. See, look, now I'm going off on a way tangent. I'm a huge Jack Benny fan.
As am I. Hey, J.M. DeMatteis is a huge Jack Benny fan. So there's.
Yeah, I love that guy.
There you go. Me too.
I'm a big fan of him, and now I know why.
There you go.
He loves a good man with an age joke and a cheap joke. You can't do better than that.
Well, I was thinking of Gunsmoke, because the radio show in particular. I mean, the hour-long TV show is. Classic Western television,
right?
But the radio show in particular came near the end of old radio dramas in the 50s, and it lasted till the early 60s. So
it was one of the few to keep going, wasn't it?
Absolutely, and they even near the end didn't even have a full half hour, and would have to do literally like an 18 minute show.
Right.
And that's the thing. I feel the same way. I think just as you described it in terms of, you know, the loser loses, but the sheriff really doesn't win. And that I think was conveyed even more in the radio show. William Conrad, believe it or not, Cannon, the big heavy set detective and stuff. He was Matt Dillon, and I think is just that kind of, you know, loner, martial, you know, classic Western character. And I really think those are great examples of good short Western fiction.
You know, what's interesting, and again, like, around the same time, not that was actually later, but, you know, there's this connection between horror and Western that's actually pretty deep. Like, even, you know, Richard Matheson, his other early TV credits, I think, was Have Gun Will Travel. What show was it? Now I'm going to be embarrassed. It was one of those, like, while he was writing Twilight Zone, he was going and writing episodes of one of the Western shows.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, that was the hot television genre, you know, in the early 60s, so
well,
sure.
I think horror and Westerns also share a lot. There's a lot, you know, there's a reason why those Leone Westerns are pretty much horror movies.
Sure.
There's a reason that, you know, High Plains Drifter is, I think, one of the great horror movies of all time, and that's that this idea of a lawless place where no matter how good you are and how kind-hearted you are, no matter how hard you try to be the good guy, there are monsters out there, and they are literal monsters. They're not, you know, they might not be, you know, they're not Frankenstein, but they have guns and have no issue killing you. And I think that's an idea that really resonates with us. And you know, you see, like, it's a shame that Westerns don't catch on in a big way. And certainly we have a couple Western books right now that do okay. But it's something that, you know, I think there's a stigma attached to it from the cheesy 50s Western. And you know, thankfully right now we are actually having kind of a renaissance, at least in film, between Assassination of Jesse James and The Proposition the year before that. I mean, we've had some really, really cool stuff.
Oh, yeah, and the 310 to Yuma remake. I mean, yeah, there's been some good films. Well, and another thing that I like about the Image book, as I've seen some preview art, God, everybody is just, like, knocking it out, not only the penciling and the inking, but really the coloring on all of these books are really unique, but also just, they really do fit the stories. You can tell. I mean, the tone is right. And, I mean, Christy Tseng, is that how you say it?
Yes.
Her art is just fantastic.
His? When I saw it, I couldn't be happier. I mean, it's really, I did a Western short for Marvel last year. That Chris Moeller drew, and
okay.
I never thought I would be as happy with Western art as I was when I got those pages. But these from Christy, like the mood and the tone, and just she just nails it, and they feel so right. I think the story. And once I got the art and I looked at it, like I actually feel like her art is so strong that it barely needs words. You know, like she really conveys everything from passage of time to the conflicts and the action that, you know, and then when you get, as a writer, when you can be phased out, I think that's a really good thing. I think when you can let your artist do the talking for you, I think that's a huge step forward.
Who are some of the other creators that are involved with Outlaw Territory? Because as I remember, there was a pretty good list of creators.
Now you're quizzing me.
Here, I'm going to go to the MySpace page while we're talking.
Do that.
Let's see.
Well, I know I'm also in the second volume.
Oh, great.
And Jeff Lemire, who just won one of them their Canadian awards that they gave away.
The Schuster's?
For his Essex County book.
Is that the Schuster's?
Yeah. No, not the Schuster's. The other. There's ones that were just announced a little bit ago. I'm going to blow it. I knew he was nominated for Eisner's. He's amazingly talented. And that story is also, it's also kind of a little... it's a little horror, but it's funnier, a little lighter, and it's another, like, it's really cool. I know Jason Aaron, I think, is in that second book.
Very cool. Here, I got
James
a list
Patrick.
For you.
James Patrick is in the first book, my good buddy and the creator of Death Comes to Dillinger.
Very cool. Chris Moreno, Ivan Brandon, Joe Kelly, Steve Grant, Josh Ortega, Dean Motter, of course. Very excited to see Dean Motter back.
Right on.
M. Sean McManus, I'm a big fan. My buddy Pat Loika managed to get some work in there.
It's great. I know it's in previews right now. And the MySpace is myspace.com/outlawterritory.
There you go.
There you go. Look at me. See, I'm like a walking billboard over here.
No, it's great. I mean, so yeah, check out the preview art over there. And it's pretty damn good. And yeah, Volume 1 comes out in October. I don't know when Volume 2 comes out. Like, it's left to see how Volume 1 does.
Sometime after that is going to be my guess.
Yeah,
I'm
bold
to be part of it. Michael's, you know, Michael Woods, who's putting the book together, has been killing himself on it for a long time and trying to get not just the right creative people, but he wanted to get the right publisher and the right timing and all that stuff. And it seems like he's doing just an amazing job. So
okay,
I can't wait to see the book. I love doing anthologies. There's very few things like being in Postcards last year, and I've done I've done lots of just little shorts for people, and I love it. So much fun.
Let's move on to horror. I guess you're ending your run on Vampirella?
I am. I think my last issue comes out sometime now-ish.
Okay.
Probably. It was a lot of fun. I had a great time writing the book. It's, you know, it had its challenges doing a quarterly. You know, the book was quarterly. I was trying to... I'm a huge fan of the... as I talked about a little bit ago, a huge fan of the Archie Goodwin stuff.
Sure.
From the late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. The Warren years, absolutely.
And the quality of the stories, and I think the nature, like the way they managed to make it into a soap opera that still had that kind of cool anthology style feel, where each story was very much self-contained. And each story was very much its own thing, but at the same time had this bigger sweeping story they were trying to tell. I think Vampy is one of those cool characters who stands right at the crossroads of being really campy and really cool, and that actually gives you a lot of flexibility in what you do with her. I was on the book for a year and a half on the book, which is only 6 issues, but still, I like to say a year and a half is much more impressive. And I got to bring back a lot of the supporting cast who haven't really been in the books for a while. I got to give Vampy got to have her man back in her life, as well as her former mentor / performing partner.
Very cool.
So it's been a lot of fun. I'm so proud of the work, and I know there's a trade paperback of the first 3 issues that includes an issue written by Phil Hester.
Oh, very cool.
My good buddy Phil Hester.
We love Phil.
I do. I love Phil so much.
Absolutely.
So I know there's a trade of that stuff, and then I know following me, I think, is Dan Brereton.
Dan Brereton. That's right. I forgot that he was taking over.
I know he's writing and drawing at least one issue. So
that's cool.
I am more than happy to step aside for such a talented man.
No, and Dan's art, although I know he'll be writing the stories, and I don't know how much he'll be able to. I'm sure he'll do at least covers.
I'm totally talking out of my ass, but I'm pretty sure he's writing and drawing.
Okay, because I remember talking to him about it, and I thought he was just scripting. But regardless, his art really does kind of fit that Vampirella world. And frankly, I really think, especially now, it's kind of like the James Bond films especially of the 60s, where they teased us with sex. And my feeling is, although I like the direction they've now gone in with Daniel Craig, but as far as Vampirella goes, I think you got to amp up the sex, quite frankly, and really make it an adult book at the end of the day.
It's sort of a weird, you know, it's sort of this weird line, because I don't disagree. I think the book needs to have the strong sexual overtone, but I think what gets missed, especially because of the what I like to call the forgotten the best forgotten years in the 90s, is that she isn't a bad girl character. She's not one of those 90s bad girl characters. She's actually she's sort of a feminist icon. Like, she's
sure.
A character who, at a time when women, you know, where when women were using their sexuality and learning to kind of accept their sexuality as a gift, she was a character who literally personified that.
Oh yeah, no, like like Pam Grier doing the early 70s blaxploitation films and stuff. No, you're right. That was Vampirella's time as well.
Yeah, and she as a character, I mean, you compare how she uses her feminine wiles to how, you know, it's Wonder Woman stuff at the time, which is
sure.
You know, again, also sort of a dark period in Wonder Woman. So I think of all the superhero characters, she is one of the, you know, she's one of the great female, strong female leads. She can carry a book.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Has for 35 years.
Well, you go back to that Archie Goodwin era, and for me it was always those incredible covers.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, the interior art was beautiful, too, but, my God, those covers were just...
Yeah, the Frazetta stuff.
Frazetta and the various Spanish artists that they were able to get, and Filipino artists. I mean, it was just incredible, these guys.
Well, and that's, you know, for me, like, it's funny because, you know, I'm not... you know, I love comics. I read comics growing up. I wasn't a big superhero nut. I wasn't crazy about superhero comics. What I liked was I liked the horror stuff. I liked the independent stuff. And I remember reading as a kid Vampirella and just thinking about how cool it is. Like, how great is this book? It's just so different from everything in my entire worldview. And so for me, getting a chance to play in that sandbox has been just such a tremendous gift. I could not be happier to have had the experience and gotten a chance to do it. And like I said, I'm immensely proud of how the book's turned out. I got to work with, you know, two fantastic artists, who you're going to see a lot from Steven Segovia, particularly, who's the first artist I worked with. That guy is just, he's a badass. Goddamn, his stuff is amazing. He really manages, like you're saying, he manages to really use the sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, his storytelling is just crystal clear and so sharp. And, you know, he's a really smart artist. And you get to see, like I said, it's one of the things about comics is, you know, while it's unlike, you know, film or TV where it's collaborative on this giant sense, in comics, you know, there's four guys who matter, pretty much, five guys who matter, and it's five guys trying to, you know, playing a jazz song, trying to make sure everyone stays in step, and having people who are better at their jobs than you are at yours makes it a lot easier. And I've been really lucky in my career in that I've kind of fallen into all of those situations where I just work with people who are just head and tails above me, and consequently I get better and better and I get to learn, and I really feel like, you know, I really feel like I'm doing some stuff that hopefully one day will be something special to somebody.
Well, tell me about another area of vampire work you're doing now, and that's for Dark Hunter. You're writing, is it American manga, or is it a translation? What are you doing for them?
The Dark Hunter books are a series of incredibly popular
vampire novels.
They're vampire romance novels, but they're not Anne Rice. They're really fun. They're very much kind of in that Buffy Angel kind of vein.
Okay.
And it's written by a wonderful lady named Sherilyn Kenyon, who's just a sweetheart. And they are bringing, the books are tremendously popular, and they want to introduce them to to teenagers. And so they want to do manga versions of some of the books. And
okay.
Just between Vampirella and the various horror stuff I did, and Derek Ruiz, who works over at Dable Brothers, was a fan of mine, and he got in touch, and, you know, the books, It's really different than anything I've ever done before. It's just, you know, I've done a lot of manga adaptation work. I'm probably a bigger manga fan than I am an American comics fan, to be honest.
Really?
So I think that's a whole other conversation. I think manga has as an art form has just grown leaps and bounds over the past 50 years, especially compared to American comics. I think American comics sort of hit once Stan and Jack and Stan and Steve did their thing with, you know, with Fantastic Four and with Spider-Man, etc. I feel like we've kind of hit this wall creatively. Like, we got that stuff, and that stuff is unbelievably great. Like, you read those Fantastic Four issues, and they are just breathtaking.
Oh yeah.
I don't know that we've made the same kind of progress. Like, this is going to sound funny, and will probably one day come back to bite me on the ass. Like, this is how I think about it. If you watch an action movie from the 60s versus an action movie from today, right, what's the key difference is the action movie today is much faster.
Right.
There's much more.
Yeah.
And we're moving, we're running as fast as we can. If you read a comic book from the 60s and you read a comic book from today, what's the big difference?
It's slower.
Much slower.
Yes, right. No, you're right about that. I like that.
We somehow have gone, and we've taken this kinetic, fun, like, and I'm totally guilty of it. It's how the medium is now, you know. So I'm not saying I'm holier than anyone else. Like, I just think I look at it and I think about it, and it's just so interesting to me that while everything else speeds up and gets faster and gets more intense, our solution has been to get slower.
You're absolutely
right. And to tell the same stories just over six times as much time.
If you go back to look at those What If stories from the 70s, the original run at Marvel, they were 48-page stories that, you're absolutely right, today are six-issue arcs.
Yeah.
And it's, it, you know.
Like I said, I love comics, but I want to be able to pick one up and read it. and the thing with this, so with manga, what happened was, is I think just financially, these guys were just making shitloads of money, and realized, like, this is actually a legitimate lifestyle. And so you have, you know, you look at, like, the work that Osamu Tezuka did, even on Astro Boy, which was in the 50s,
mm-hmm.
And it's like, American comics still don't do that stuff. Like, we still can't do that weird like fourth wall breaking. We still can't do that mix, that smashing mix of fun and action and drama and heart and funny and all these things. Like, it's all these things that in manga are second nature, because that's how they work. They work. Manga works because it's odd. Like, it functions as a nature of being by being singular. And I think, you know, I think that has a lot to do with the difference in the markets, which is in America, it's all about the characters, whereas in Japan, it's all about the creators. You know, it's
okay.
Really, like, even, and here, certainly, there has been progress towards people following, and you have your, you know, your Wizard Top Tens, who people will follow on whatever they do.
Right.
But, you know, you put a top level guy on a top level book, and it's going to sell more than a top level guy on a mid level book. Whereas in Japan, if you love Rumiko Takahashi, you're going to read anything she does. It doesn't matter what it is. It can be, you know, Maison Ikkoku, which is a bunch of people living in a house where the lazy student is in love with the lady who runs the boarding house.
Okay.
Or Inuyasha, which is about, you know, a mystical action-adventure book. And then also just in terms of scope, I mean, we certainly, you know, you have guys who do, you know, 100-issue runs here, or you even, you know, or, you know, you have Dave Sim doing Cerebus and getting 300 issues. 300, 500?
300. I'm thinking of Jeff Smith and Bone.
But exactly, so like that, and that's a huge achievement, right?
Oh, absolutely.
But you go to Japan, and these guys have 10 of those books.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they work their asses off.
Well, they also have a studio of guys helping them out.
That's true. Like, what I'm saying, though, is that the difference is that they're in a market that allows them to create in such volume that they get better faster, and
okay.
they have more room to spread their wings. Whereas for me, you know, I do a book like Punks, punksthecomic.com. See, let me do them.
You and Cody Chamberlain, absolutely.
Yeah, me and Cody are doing that book, and it's something that, like, every time we get to do something for it, I learn something. I feel like I come out of the experience of working on that book and working with Cody a better writer. But we don't have, you know, because the book is so odd and so outside of the American market, it's nigh impossible for us to do a huge amount of them. But both, I mean, I guarantee you, if Cody and I could do that book and make the same living we get doing the other work we do, that's what we would be doing.
Very cool. It's
so satisfying to do something that is like, let's stretch our wings creatively. Let's do something that nobody else is doing. And so, yeah, that's my long-winded way of saying what I love about manga. You read, you know, you look at books like, you know, you look at, you know, Death Note, you look at Monster. These are mature books for adults that, you know, sell millions of copies over, you know, in Japan. It's amazing. It's really, you know, it's a totally different world. But, you know, that being said, like, there's certain things that we do really well. And we as Americans have a great sense of legacy, I think. We have, and it has its upside and its downside, the way that we cherish our characters. You have, you know, you can't have a character like Batman, who has the same resonance as Batman. Batman is a character that every single person on Earth knows, you know, and that's something that we are really good at that. We're really good at finding an icon and making an icon work. So, yeah, that's my rant about manga. Thank you.
Well, there's one other manga that you're working on, and that's you are translating Afro Samurai.
I did. It's a two-volume book, and the first one came out, a two-volume series. The first book came out, or is coming out, in the next few weeks, I think. I'm not sure whether it's actually out yet or not. Yeah, they're really cool. I love the cartoon. I think.
Oh,
the cartoon,
yeah, me too.
It's just so wacky.
Yeah.
It's got that same, you know, like, to talk about that same thing. Like, it really has that feeling of like, let's just do whatever. Let's just do what we want to do. That really makes it sing. And the manga is actually different. So if you have seen the anime, the manga is actually quite different. It touches on some of the same things, but it's different. It's really cool. It's actually a really cool book. It's very, very different. So, and I would highly recommend that. I also did have the other manga series that I've been doing that I also love is for Del Rey, and it is called Princess Resurrection. which is also sort of a it's also sort of a Buffy-esque. It's sort of I think the way they originally pitched it to me was it's sort of like Buffy meets Evil Dead.
Okay.
And so it's this cool. It's very much like it sort of almost has a feel of like Buffy versus the Universal Monster.
Very nice.
Where she's kind of fighting traditional Hollywood style monsters, but taken with a Japanese slant. And so they have a great ability to take someone else's culture and adapt it into their own. And it's so much fun, just so much fun to write to not write, but adapt that stuff. I love manga. I should have an original English language manga that I did for someone coming out. Hopefully in the next like year or so. So I'm trying to do more of that stuff, and it's tough. At the same time, like, that's the other downside to manga is it's really hard to be an American and get to do original in terms of doing something long. And that's really for me, that's the big attraction is being able to do a book that is 3,000 pages long. Is just it's just amazing to me. It's just such a cool idea. So hopefully I will find a studio or a publisher who is willing to let me write my gigantic, crazy manga opus. Like that I did Magnus, like I combined Magnum Opus with Manga Opus. That's my...
I liked it.
Yeah, I'm working on it.
Let's go back to short form, in image. Glad to see that Phil Hester and Andy Kuhn are back doing Fire Breather, and I guess you're doing...
Phil just keeps coming up. It's like you can't get away from
him. We love Phil. That's all right.
True.
But I wanted to know, I guess you and Tony Fleece are doing the backups of that series?
We are. We're doing their Little Fire Breather, and that's L-I apostrophe L.
Like Little Archie?
Yeah, it's great. Like it's something. Tony is a brilliant, brilliant writer and artist. He's really just tremendously talented. And this is a way, I wanted to find a way to have people see his work and just be exposed to him. We're good buddies. We're both good buddies with Phil and Andy. And, I knew they were looking to fill a couple pages in the back, and so we thought we would give it a try. And I think they actually turned out great. I'm really, really proud of them. And Tony has just done an amazing job. Tony is somebody who, come hell or high water, he's going to be incredibly successful in this business.
He's one of the funniest guys I know in comics.
Not only is he hysterical, he has great instinct story-wise. He really understands what makes the medium work.
Yeah, he's a good storyteller. I agree with you.
And he loves superheroes. And I think when he's given his chance by one of the big companies, I think he's going to just really knock it out of the park. I think he is poised to break through. So
excellent.
I'm pretty sure you'll be seeing much more from Tony.
Very cool. And, yeah, I know we will. I'm due to talk to him about some of his other short story work that he's got coming up.
Oh, yeah, he's doing a bunch of really cool stuff that Tony makes. You know, it's stuff that if anybody else was doing it, you would look sideways at him. But Tony makes it his own. He makes it into something tremendously special.
Very cool. And tell me about the Cleaners from Dark Horse. What do we know about that?
That I think is going to be in previews next month. September previews is my guess. Cleaners is something that a good buddy of mine, Mark Wheaton, created. I co-created it with him, but it's really his baby. Mark is an incredible guy. He was the best man at my wedding. He's been a good friend of mine for a long time, and he kind of helped give me a leg up into the film industry a little bit and let me dip my toes into the water. And so I figured Turnabout is fair play, and I wanted him to get a chance to really truly express his own voice and get an opportunity. You know, there's the big difference between working in Hollywood and working in comics is that what comes out at the end of the process of making a movie generally has very little to do with the writer. Working in comics, it's everything to do with the writer.
Sure.
And I think, you know, when you have somebody who, I mean, he's easily one of the smartest men I've ever met in my entire life. And having someone like him who just has these totally unique visions that are so far away from what everybody else is doing, not just in comics, but in any medium. Like, he's really doing stuff. He really wants to do stuff that's different and special. And I think The Cleaners is that. It's a crazy book. It's a very, very crazy book, and I think people are going to really dig it.
Another spy kind of thing, or?
It's about trauma scene cleaners in Los Angeles. So they're the people who clean up after horrific accidents. But these guys specifically, they're obsessed. Their team leader is obsessed with unsolvable cases. So they find themselves on these kind of mystery cases that that tend towards the supernatural. And it's all about how, just like there's the perfect solvent for every spill, for every
sure.
blood stain, there's also the perfect explanation, no matter how bizarre the situation. So it's sort of like, the easy way to think of it is that it's like the CSI of supernatural crime.
Okay, like CSI meets X-Files, kind of.
Sort of, yeah. That's,
okay.
That would probably be the better way of putting it, John. Thank you.
Well, you know, that's why I get the Hollywood money. You know.
That's right. That's what all those big bucks are for. So, it's really cool. It's Rashan Ekdahl, who's done a bunch of stuff. He did a bunch of, like, Warhammer comics for Boom.
Oh, cool.
This is, like, a big departure for him, but he's knocking it out of the park. He's doing really, really great work. And, you know, Dark Horse, as I said, you know, those black and white early anthology comics that I was reading as a kid included Dark Horse Presents.
Sure.
You know, and I'm going to say my two favorite American comics, Concrete and Usagi Yojimbo, both have, you know, both exist because of Dark Horse. You know, and so I to get to do a book there for me is just a huge thrill, and to help Mark get an opportunity to tell his own story and do something that I think is just amazing, is a privilege. And to even have my name on it is like a gift to me. So I'm just totally psyched. I really hope everybody buys it so we can do more and more of the series in years to come.
Well, now, as we wrap up, I want to know about this. Is it an online video thing that you're working on? Tell me about that. It's a non-comics thing, but it sounds pretty interesting.
Well, I just got hired on a little bit back as the new head writer for the new show from the creators of Lonely Girl 15.
Wow!
So it's a lot of people don't know.
Sure.
But when you say Lonely Girl 15, like in your head, it's a girl sitting in her room talking to her camera, right?
Right.
So that is the show, but that's not the show. The show actually is actually this big, kind of really cool, dark, science fiction-y, conspiracy cult type show. It's very much, man, I keep saying everything is very much in the Buffy Angel vein, but I clearly have one direction that I'm going.
Very Whedon-esque.
It's true. It's very much in that vein. It's got a little bit of Lost to it. What the show is actually about is that this idea that the Fountain of Youth is in the blood of these specific girls. And there's all these cults and secret societies who have been trying to bleed, who've been, you know, raising and breeding these girls in an effort to gain immortality.
Wow.
And the show is done, I would call it cinema verite style, which means that the whole show is real. It's done as though it is totally real. The website is 100% interactive. You can email the characters and they will email you back. You know, you can post on the message board and you'll get posts back from the characters. You can go out, we have live interactive events where the characters will show up at a location and say that they, you know, they want to meet, if anybody can be there to help them out, and you get there and the characters are there.
Wow.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to ask, so there will be webisodes, I'm assuming, and are they at various lengths or, you know?
The new show is called The Resistance.
Resistance, okay.
And you can actually, if you go to lg15.com, you can click on the Lonely Girl. I'm trying to think where the best way to go. If you go to the lg15.com /Lonely Girl, you can actually explore the site and you'll find there's a trailer for the new show.
Okay.
So what it is, it's a combination of things. It's, every day there's new content. Every day there's, you know, you get a video or you get, you know, that can be a blog, it can be an action post where you have the kids running around, you know, going crazy. And every day you're drawn into this world where, you know, everything is, it's like I said, it's purely interactive. It's one of those things, like as doing comics, you spend a lot of time talking to people who tell you that they understand the future. Like, this is how we're going to make a fortune on the internet. these guys, Miles and Greg, who run the company, they're the first guys I've ever sat down with who've told me that, and then followed it up with explaining how it works. And it works. Like, they're doing something. When you, if you want to see the future of entertainment, if you want to see what it means to do a show on the internet, check out their site. It's truly amazing. And then this show, because it's a new show, it's a combination. It's you know, it's going to be, like I said, I'm the head writer. The chief director of the show is actually a guy named Yusuf, who was the director of their British show. There's a show called Cape Modern, which everybody is crazy about. And the show is just amazing looking. So I was bringing back, there's a couple characters from the old show who are moving forward. For anybody who follows the show, it's the characters Jonas and Sarah move on to the new show.
They'll be on Resistance.
Yes, on to the Resistance.
Wow.
And
okay.
So, but there's going to be, you know, we're gonna make sure that the show is a great way for not only for the old fans to get more of the story, but also is a great place for new fans to jump on. So it's going to be we're gonna do our best to make it into something that's as special as the original show was, and but at the same time is very much its own thing. It's hard because there's not a lot of it I can talk about.
Sure.
But I'm just so to be working with everybody at the company, to be working with Miles and Greg and Amanda and Yusuf. It's amazing. Like, they're doing stuff. They're doing the kind of thing that when you sit down and you actually watch it, you realize not only how obvious it is, but how perfect it is. Like, this is exactly how, like I said, this is exactly how entertainment on the internet should work.
I see.
So, for people listening, like, it's if you're a comic book fan, if you're into Lost and Heroes and all that stuff, like, this is a show. It's online. It's free. And it's amazing. So please check it out.
No, I think this is really an ambitious frontier that, you know, creators can now go to. And for the longest time, they haven't been sure how to, you know, what is the right format, what kind of program will work, you know, online and as a streaming program. And it's funny that even the big boys are trying to do it to tie into their long form, hour long, you know, television shows or films. And it is. I think this is a very interesting experimental time that really visual entertainment hasn't seen since the 50s anthology shows, and we had the Rod Serlings and Richard Mathesons kind of coming out and telling some unique stories. So everything is worth checking out and really getting a grip on it and seeing how it goes.
When I think, you know, like you're saying, again, if you look at those kind of pre-shows, and not to go back to Jack Benny, but you look at the Jack Benny show on TV, and, like, I feel like he's one of the first guys who got it. Like, the show started out, and it was essentially just, you know, vaudeville.
Yeah,
it was
variety.
Basically a radio show on TV. And I think the internet was a lot of the same. A lot of what we've seen has been, let's just put our show up and that's fine. But the fact is that the internet is a totally different medium. The internet only works, the internet functions based on interactivity. You know, we're hardwired when we're on the internet to be doing 20 things at once. We're hardwired to be IMing with our friends and Twittering and checking our email and all these things while we're doing it. And just sitting down to watch an hour-long show doesn't really capitalize on that. And what the guys at Lonely Girl have done is really figured out how to make a show that is, you know, when, you know, everyone, they call it new media. They talk about the internet as
sure.
New media. And to most places, I think new media is old media on the internet.
Yeah, yeah.
What we're doing really is new media. It's, you know, it's funny, like, I...
Well, it's more integrated with everything, like you were saying, with all these other components of how the internet works and how people communicate and interact online.
Well, that's exactly. It's all this idea of community. You know, you go to, for us comic fans, you go to these message boards, you go to the Bendis board, or you go to, you know, Millar World, and they are these very tight-knit communities, and certainly the content, the printed content, is a topic of discussion. But at the same time, because there's no content being generated there, it's all about, you go and buy this and then bring it here. I think the idea of having a community and sharing this experience with a world full of friends while watching the show, being able to watch the show and actually interact with it and actually influence it and actually change the show as it goes, I think is just amazing. It's such a cool idea. You know, like, you and I have talked about it before. Like, I have been living what was my dream for a long time, which was I stay at home every day, I don't wear pants, and I write comic books. Like, seriously, like, that is as good as it gets.
Sure.
Sitting down with these guys and really getting to see what they're doing. I wear pants every day, John. Every single day.
Well, good
I have
for you,
pants
Jeff.
On. I go into an office. I bought a car.
Wow.
Like, that's the level of excitement I have about what they're doing. It's really something unique and really something cool. And
excellent.
Just being a part of it it's got that, you know, you to feel literally in on the ground floor on something this exciting and this big and with people with like a clear artistic vision, you know, as well as a clear business plan, like it's madness. It's total madness, I tell you.
No, and I'm
totally psyched. I really hope you guys I really hope everybody checks it out. I think you'd actually particularly like it, John.
It sounds cool, man. Honestly.
You know what you're into, so.
Yes, you do. And it does sound interesting, and like I say, I'm curious where all this is going as well, so it does sound compelling, and I will check it out. It's lg15.com/lonelygirl?
You can just go to lg15.com, and that's the gateway that will get you into everything.
Okay, very cool. Well, that's great, man. You got a full plate of interesting stories and interesting genres, and now going beyond comics, we can even watch your content online. But in the immediacy, I think people need to go to Pilot Season, myspace.com/pilotseason.
They do. You can vote every single day. And last time I checked, my book was losing.
I was going to say, you got stiff competition, man.
What's that?
You got some stiff competition, and other friends of the program are voting against you here.
I know. Well, I blame the communists, actually.
You think
everything.
The Georgia invasion has impeded your success with
exactly.
Alibi?
They're screwing it all up. No, you know, it's great. Like, I think we actually didn't get to talk about it, but I think this year's pilot season is just, like, I'm so honored. Like, I know I say this a lot. I feel so incredibly lucky for all the things that I'm doing right now. You know, it's like, I really am. Like, it's like I live in this strange dream world where I have an amazing wife and an amazing job, and I have all this work that I've gotten to do over the past few years that I'm just immensely proud of, and that I can stand by every single one of them. Like, that to me is just, it's like a total and utter dream world. And it can be done, kids. You see, there is light at the end of that tunnel.
Man, we are getting a recurring theme, I think, of a bunch of creators right now that have their own creator-owned books and also just a lot of original stuff, as opposed to what we see in the mainstream lately on Word Balloon. So I'm glad to include you with some of these other guys like Rick Remender and Robert Kirkman and John Hickman. They're all recent guests. And Josh Fialkoff is another fine writer. And check out his stuff, whether it's Alibi or Cyblade from Top Cow, his end run on Vampirella. And looking forward to the Outlaw Territory story and Image. And also the manga stuff and the cleaners from Dark Horse and now Resistance as well online. So that's great, Josh. Congrats, and congratulations on the wedding, too. I know it's been a year, hasn't it?
It's been. We're getting close to the one-year anniversary. It's in October.
Very cool. Well, my best to you and your new bride, and best of luck, and keep writing the good stories, man, and we'll keep reading them and watching them.
Thank you so much, John. I appreciate you. You do a service to this industry, and I'm honored to be a part of it.
That's Josh Fialkoff. Do yourself a favor. Make sure you check out things like Elk's Run, his wonderful book from Villard. You can vote for Alibi at Top Cow's MySpace page for Pilot Season, which is myspace.com/pilotseason. In fact, all the Pilot Season books are available for free at our Newsarama.com website, so make sure you go check them out. Look out in October for Outlaw Territory, the Western anthology from Image Comics. Be looking for the Dark Horse Comics series starting in November, The Cleaners. And it's already running online at lg15.com, The Resistance. If you want to check it out, the website there, lg15.com/, The Resistance. That'll do it for this edition of Word Balloon. Thanks again for listening. This is John Suntress. Don't forget, you can find Word Balloon at newsarama.com, at wordballoon.com. And, of course, you can follow me on Twitter if you'd like. John Word Balloon is my handle on Twitter. You can check out my MySpace page, myspace.com/wordballoon. And if you have any questions or comments about the show, I'm always available via email, john@wordballoon.com. And, of course, Word Balloon has its message board at wordballoon.com and jinxworld.com. You can find the links to the message board at either of those websites. So thanks again, and in the meantime, Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2008.